Welcome to the She's a 10 times 5 show with hosts Lori Jabbar and Michelle Emick. We're bringing public figures, subject matter experts, and other accomplished guests to the Studio 50 table to serve you up the best tips, tricks, and key takeaways that all us midlifers want to know about. Okay, time to join us for some times 5 fun. Let's go.
Okay, all you tenors. Lori and Michelle are bringing you a guest and story that exudes the message of resiliency, courage, and the importance of supporting and paving the way for other women. This episode's guest is Kristen Baker. Kristen is a retired Army colonel, former military intelligence commander, and the first female commander of cadets at the United States Military Academy at West Point. Kristen has spent more than 30 years breaking ground for other women, and it hasn't been easy. We'll discuss her time at West Point and the challenges, lessons, and scrutiny she faced with that controversial appointment. Look as good as you feel, with great skin made simple. Welcome to the all-in-one skincare system, created by world-renowned plastic surgeon, Dr. Amir Karam. There's no need to look anywhere else. The Karam MD Trifecta packs more than 20 state-of-the-art ingredients into an easy three-step system that addresses all aspects of aging for your best skin ever. Use discount code SHE'S10 for 10% off your purchase. Let's go.
Okay, welcome, Kristen.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. Okay, I am super hyped. Michelle, you know this. So one of the things that we wanted to tackle this season is the whole lane of resiliency. Life is rough as you hit, right? Life is rough. It can be challenging and daunting. And I think even more so when you hit your second chapter, because you're looking to change gears. You might be looking to do something new with your life, and it's not always easy to shake off the dust and put yourself in the arena.
Oh, 100% that.
Yes. So we are bringing someone who I have known for many, many moons to the table, Kristen Baker, and we are going to talk about her story, because it is an interesting one, and she has faced a lot of challenges. She's put herself into the, you want to call it the good old boys?
The gladiators arena, or the arena of the gladiators.
Yes, as the first female first captain of the United States Military Academy at West Point. That was a mouthful. Say it fast 5 times. Let's go. We're going to talk all about it because it is a both a beautiful story and one that I think will surprise a lot of people. And so we're going to dive in under the hood with Kristen and talk all about it.
Yeah, I have to say, you know, thank you to both of you. I mean, the fact that you both are graduates of West Point is, for somebody that hasn't been in the military, thank you for your service. And I want to know everything. I want to dive in. I want to start from the beginning. So Kristen, I want to understand, walk us through, because this was, so when you were appointed first female captain, was that 1989, correct?
Correct.
Can you walk us through that experience? And maybe for the listeners and the watchers in the beginning, you know, what exactly did that mean and the significance of it?
Yeah, so absolutely. So it's really interesting. I mean, when I will be honest and say that when I was in high school, I don't think I had any aspirations of going to West Point or joining the military. My father was in the military, and he took us up on a vacation. Well, on the way back from a vacation, he let us stop at West Point. And so we got to go into the museum and we got to see kind of the history of the museum. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. This is really interesting. I had never thought that I would do anything like this, but you know what? I'm going to apply and see if I can get in, because it's my dad's alma mater, right? And, you know, classic father-daughter relationship. Like, I want to prove to him that I could do this. And so I applied and I got in, and then really couldn't figure out how to get out of it. And so I wanted to play soccer in college, and the coach was recruiting. He wasn't really recruiting. For the first time, they were going to have an actual intercollegiate team. And so somebody took me down to meet him, and that the rest is history. He wanted me to play, and I thought, this is perfect. I wanted to go to a school where I could play soccer, and he actually wants me on the team. So that's how I ended up kind of falling into that whole, what ended up being my career. So roll forward. I mean, I did, I think, and Laura can attest to this, it's just survival for the first couple of years there. You're just trying to get through the day. So I can't say, again, I didn't have any aspirations to be the first captain or to do anything, you know, really stupendous. My dad's one piece of advice to me was stay in the background, like just lay low, get through the experience. It's going to be hard. My father was a West Point graduate as well. He was class of 1966. So if you ever read the book by Rick Atkinson's The Long Gray Line, that was my dad's class. He had a lot of classmates killed in Vietnam. And my dad stayed in for the full 30 years. But I apparently, and Lori and I were talking about this, neither one of us did a very good job of staying in the background. I mean, it seemed impossible.
I don't know you that well, Kristen, but I'm like, I get it. I mean, Lori, come on. She's never going to be in the background.
Don't put baby in the corner.
Exactly. And there's so few women there that you just stand out by virtue of being so unique in that respect. So for the first 3 years, I was just trying to get through. I didn't even know what I wanted to major in. I kind of tripped and fell into engineering, psychology, or ergonomics. So I always think Parfenugan, man-machine interaction. And going in between your junior and senior year. So between my sophomore and junior year, somebody on the faculty or on the staff asked me if I would be interested in a leadership position outside of our normal organization. It's a company. And I said, yeah, absolutely. Sure. Why not? And so I ended up getting a really interesting job my junior year, which was basically on our staff for our regiment, which was my first foray into leadership beyond just kind of a small group. And it was really interesting. It's fun.
I'm gonna interrupt you for 1 second because we understand what that means, but I would gather that most of the audience won't. So kind of break it down where you explain that kind of the organizational structure very briefly. And then as you kind of go through and matriculate through this journey, we need to talk about what the first captain is because I think, okay. All right. Perfect.
So there's the Corps is made of cadets. So it's all students and they select leadership along the way from the student population. And so I'll make it just very briefly. I was selected to be a sergeant major, which is kind of a top position your junior year. And after that, I did nothing for the second semester. I was just a student and it was wonderful and I loved it. But the Corps has about 4,000 cadets back then. So there's about 1,000 per regiment. So you think I was the top junior position for about 1,000 students in that organization. And so long story short, that's kind of the first time where anybody got to see me in a leadership position. And it led to a selection process for our senior year positions. Now, the funny story behind this is I found out that they wanted to interview me for a top position in the summer, but they gave me the wrong time for the interview. And of course, remember back then we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have phones in the offices. I showed up, I don't know how late to this interview. I just remember walking in going, this is not going to go well. But for whatever reason, we got into the conversation. You could just sort of see the whole room change. Like people were interested. Well, this is, you know, and I suppose I was probably one of the few women they interviewed. So it was just different. And so I ended up getting a good job that summer, which eventually led to the first captain. So the position of first captain, the commandant, which is the number two military leader of all of West Point, brought me into his office and said, Kristen, I want to let you know that you've been selected as the first captain. And I just looked at him. And he said, you wanted the job, didn't you? And I just looked at him. I had no idea. I had asked my father, do you think West Point is ready for a woman commander? And he said, absolutely not. Not for another 10 years. And so that's how I found out. And I don't think the institution, West Point, was ready for the response that they got. It ended up within a week, I was on the front page of the New York Times. And when we came back, we do this long kind of road march back from our summer area back to the school. There were just reporters lined up all along the end of the route who wanted to talk to me about being selected as the first captain. So it was a little bit overwhelming. I had never dealt with the press before and had no idea what to expect. I got no preparation. The next morning,
talking points or anything, or you just were nothing to the wolves?
Absolutely nothing. And the next day they came and picked me up in a limo, threw me in the back, and took me out to do all the morning talk shows. So ABC, NBC, CBS. And again, no real talking points, no preparation. They, in the limo, there was a phone, and the limo driver said, "Hey, you know, there's a phone back there and it works. Is there anybody you want to call?" And I said, "You know, probably ought to call my parents and tell them about this." I hadn't even told my parents, my family, about this, about being selected as the first captain. And that's how it began. And it not only made a lot of news media in the United States, but internationally. So I would have reporters from Italy and Japan and Germany and just all over the globe that were really interested in this idea of having a woman commanding this 4,000 cadet corps of predominantly men. I think it was, what, 90% men then? Maybe 10% women? Between 10 and 20%.
Well, so the other significant thing is it's not only that you're commanding the Corps of Cadets, but you're also the face of the Academy. And for people that don't know, one of the things that West Point is known for is, and I think it's like in the top five of tourist attractions, although that's changed since 9/11 because the campus is closed, but we do parades. And every Saturday we march out and do the pomp and circumstance, and people come and they come and watch it. It's a tourist attraction. So when Kristen was selected as the first captain or commander of the Corps, she's the face of the Academy that walks out and leads the entire Corps of Cadets on that parade field. So there's, you know, if we have dignitaries that come or leadership in the military or politicians, she's the one that is escorting that individual. So it is a very, very significant position to have obtained.
Wow. I mean, and you're how old at the time? 20 years old?
21. I had just turned 21.
Wow.
Yeah.
What did that feel like? I mean, that I don't even know how you'd sleep at night.
Well, I didn't get a lot of sleep, that's for sure, but mostly because I was trying to keep up with all the responsibilities, the position, as well as just the academics. So you're still a student full time. Yeah. And West Point's an engineering school, first and foremost. And so you carry a really terrific academic load on top of everything else. So I tried really hard not to think about it too much, just, you know, day-tight compartments, get up in the morning, do everything you have to do, and you try to get through the day, because you're absolutely right. When I look back on it now, and think of how, you know, just what it was like as a 21-year-old to take on all that kind of responsibility. I'm glad I was probably fairly naive about how it was being seen outside of the four walls of West Point, because that would have been so much more pressure than it already was. I mean, I've read stories many, many years later about the general officers, retired general officers, and one of them in particular who was absolutely apoplectic that they had selected as a woman as the first captain. And his comment during the football game, one of the football games, is, "Next thing you know, they're going to have water girls instead of water boys." I mean, it was just, it's a lot. And
well, let's talk about that, because you and I have spoken off air and we collectively agreed that this was something probably that was being pressured from the political landscape onto the Academy, but emphatically, hard no, the Academy and its alumni and everyone associated was not ready for you as a female to be in that position. So let's talk about that, because on the flip side, you know, you say you are naive, but you couldn't have been that naive to know what the rhetoric was like, right?
Yeah. And I was thinking the reaction of the cadets. I mean, just everyone had to have an opinion. We're talking 1989. I mean, the height of the boys club, and you're already in an environment that's predominantly male.
Well, and I want to add this too, just a little color commentary, excuse me, is that was when VMI, they didn't have women at VMI, the Virginia Military Institute. Did I say that right, Kristen?
Yes.
And you would have officers that actually were on the staff of the Academy, and some of them might've been from VMI, and they would have on their shirts, you know, we walk in a restroom, you have the female kind of emblem, right? VMI, female emblem on their t-shirt, circle with a line through. That's a fact, Jack. And no one said anything. So that just gives you an idea of the climate. So, yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to hijack that, Kristen. So to take us underneath the hood on, you know, all of that junk.
So it was a lot from the perspective of just the reaction and counteraction to the announcement, both again, internally and externally. And I really think I did everything I possibly could to isolate myself from the day to day. And, you know, I joke about this sometimes, but people talk a lot today about how kids are just under so much pressure all the time. They can't escape it because they've got Facebook and they've got Instagram and they've got all these different means of communication. West Point, we were the first class that got issued computers. And so we had things called bulletin boards, which were just, you know, modern or, you know, very old school now, but that was the way people could communicate. And it was a social tool, social networking tool of sorts. I just didn't read them. I knew people were talking about me and, you know, speculating and everything. And again, my job was really just to survive. But then I would get people like Phyllis Schlafly, who had written an article about how could I, how dare I think I could lead a group of, you know, young, virile men. And I was so stunned that another woman would say something like that about me. And I used to think all the time, like, I'm 21 years old. I mean, really, do you think that I'm, you know, aggressively pursuing some kind of agenda? I'm just trying to figure out how to get through 4 years of university and get on to be a second lieutenant in the Army. But there was a lot of that. But I got the good and the bad. So I would get, I can't remember who this was, and Laura, you might remember, but there was an interview with a paper once where the reporter asked one of the cadets, what do you think about having a woman first captain? And her response was priceless. She said, as opposed to what? So it was those little snippets of kind of knowing there were these little pockets of support out there that I think really made a difference. And I remember I got a letter from a Marine once, and I would just get letters all the time. And some of them were, I would get old grads' wives would, you know, write me these letters and talk, you know, how dare you again, kind of the more the Phyllis Schlafly. But then I'd get a Marine out there who's like, I'm so glad to see you in that role. And so it just really was a mix, but I kind of took the good with the bad. I did a lot of travel. I did a lot of public speaking as part of that. And again, no talking points. It was just kind of like figure it out as you go. I had a photographer that was assigned to me as a kind of a protocol press officer because they were really unprepared for the response that they got. And his name is Ray Albu. We still send Christmas cards all these years later. But he was, in a lot of ways, he just helped me get through a lot of it. And I remember that shoeboxes full of mail I'd gotten that just went under my bed because I didn't know what else to do with them. And I would get like really some really crazy ones where I had a guy in Germany who would send me letters all in German and send me jewelry. And then I would have like young students who, there was a young skater who was putting together a whole routine for skating, and she dressed up as like a cadet. And her name was the same as mine, which is why it was really neat. Her name was Kristen Michelle Baker. And so you kind of took the good with the bad. And there were some really neat advantages to it too, but I have about a million stories of some of the more awkward moments where things maybe didn't go the way they should have.
How did your father react once? I mean, you mentioned how he reacted initially. How about throughout that role? Did he change?
I think at first he was stunned. I really do think he was. And you know, I think back on his class, again, all men, lost the most in Vietnam. He has never talked to me about like any reaction of his classmates, but I think he was very proud at the same time that if I was going to go and if I was going to work really hard while I was there, that now because years later, he admitted to me, or maybe admitted, but he shared with me that when he found out I was going to West Point, he said, I just felt sick to my stomach, because he knew what it was like when he was there. So he knew what his daughter was getting herself into. But I think both my parents were really proud. Now, funny side story, my mom was approached by a magazine and asked, they said they wanted to do a piece on me. And so my mom, you know, said, sure, what do you need? And they said, well, we really appreciate it if you could send us pictures of her growing up. We'd love to put those in the magazine. So my mom thought it was a military magazine. It was Star Magazine. And when she finally realized it, she went into a grocery store, saw Star Magazine on the, on the checkout, and she's like, "What have I done?" And it ended up being a fantastic article, but it was just little things like that were abs. I mean, hard copy. I got book offers, and I had at one point a filmmaker that was thinking about putting together a film, and I always remember thinking, "I'm only 21. My life's not that interesting. What are you going to talk about?" But I did survive an embedded reporter from the Rolling Stone. So I had a Rolling Stone reporter follow me around for several days and do a piece on the whole experience as well. And so again, all over the map on what really kind of happened behind the scenes during that experience. But it was definitely a day-to-day survival experience for me.
Not only were you having to do your role, you were thrown in the limelight, and you had a whole nother piece of that. That's amazing.
Well, one of the things that I have always told people, and you kind of alluded to it, where, stay in the background, right? You don't be the lightning rod of attention, because that there's nothing good that's going to come out of that as a female. But the other thing too, that's a really interesting dynamic that happens is, one, do you pass the eye test as a woman? Like, do you look good in your uniform? Are you trim? Can you keep up on a run? All of those things that are, gosh, somewhat superficial to some degree. And if you do well, you do really well. You kind of get put in this lane where, okay, she's cool. She's one of us. If you struggle, really hard. And so when Kristen was in this role, I remember distinctly, because I was a junior, it's almost like some people wanting her to step in shit, some people anticipating her to step in shit. And so you really have to watch everything you do, because there's people wanting you to fall on the landmine, right? And expecting you to. Like, of course it's going to happen. She's going to screw up at some point. And man, how you made it through that year without any of that is beyond me.
It's a really good point. And, to your comment about the visible presence, I think that was one that I just don't even think that I thought about at that time in my life. It wasn't something that really occurred to me until much later. But I remember that front page of the New York Times picture of me was me coming back from a run. And I was in our little gold t-shirt and shorts and, hair back in a, but that was right after they allowed us to start growing our hair long, because for the first 3 years, three years I was there, we had to cut it short. It had to be short. And then they finally realized that there was no real harm in allowing us to grow it long and put it up. But the commentary, the negative commentary was, well, her hair is unkempt from that picture. And I still remember thinking, I just came back. And thankfully somebody stepped in and said, well, she just came back from a road march or a run of, what did you really expect? But that is tough when you recognize you are truly in that fishbowl, when you are at the top of that ladder and everybody underneath you is just watching to see what you do and don't do. And I still to this day, I think part of the reason that I was selected for the position was there was a level of probably level maturity that they assessed in that that interview. But also at the same time, I was not big on self-aggrandizement. So I was very much like, this, takes a team. I was very much a believer in the teamwork to get things done. I had a great staff, Nate Allen. I mean, just a number of people who really worked hard to make sure I was successful. And to be completely fair, I traveled in that role. So the day-to-day workings, really, I had to have a great staff, and I had good roommates who really were supportive in the sense that they kind of kept me on the level. So of course my roommates were both women. That was important to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That would have been a real scandal if they weren't. Well, I remember, two things I want to ask you, but the first thing is kind of a fun one. You were dating someone from your staff, right? A football player?
I was dating him long before then.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, even that element of when you start to date another cadet, you have to have your doors open. You're not allowed to be in a room with closed door with a person of the other sex. There's no public displays of affection whatsoever allowed. No holding hands, no whatever. And it's just,
back up. Doors open. Can't show any affection. Doors open.
Yeah.
So what's going on there?
unique experience.
You very unique dating experience. And I dated a football player as well. And so, you know, everything you do as far as a normal relationship has to happen off campus, civilian clothes, et cetera. But you know, you do stupid stuff. I mean, you're in a relationship, and the fact that Kristen, you know, was dating someone, and I mean, again, you came out really not only unscathed, but the bright, shiny object that, yeah. And I applaud you for that. I mean, let me bring up something that I recall, and you tell me if I'm accurate. There was a moment, and for the audience that doesn't understand the dynamics of the academy, we all eat together. If you can imagine, 4,000 people go into what we call the mess hall. And
like
we
a cafeteria style.
Yep.
They bring the food to your table.
Yep. Okay. And we literally eat all at once. That is a podcast in and of itself. I don't know. The staff that it takes to pull off what we do at mealtime will blow your fucking mind. Okay. That being said, I recall when we were walking into the mess hall, there was a paper mache or some type of dummy of you hanging. Am I correct?
So it was actually my uniform, which they had routinely liked to sneak into my room while I was sleeping and steal, because we didn't have any locks on the door, and a mop for hair that they had hung suspended from the top of this huge building. So when you walked in, you saw it. So yes, that is correct. And I eventually found out who did it, but they returned that. The biggest thing is I needed my uniform back. I had to stand in that parade that you were talking about earlier, but I would have little pranks like that pulled all the time. And they would stand outside my door and yell "First Captain Rocket," which is a cheer we do at the football games. And there were all kinds of little crazy shenanigans that went on behind the scenes. They stole my laundry at one point, and I never did find out who did that. They went through my drawers and took my clothes. And I mean, I had enough uniforms to wear to class, but a lot of things were missing. And it mysteriously ended up back in my room in a suitcase on the floor when I woke up one morning. So there were some definite shenanigans that went on behind the scenes that I never did get to the bottom of and found out. But I had, again, that supportive staff. So my Nate Allen, my executive officer, after that whole mess hall incident with the mop for hair, there was a group of cadets standing outside my room and they were yelling "First Captain Rocket." He hilariously put this long wig on and went and stood in my window and pretended like he was me for this whole thing to respond to these cadets. But yeah, there were some crazy things that went on during that year.
Okay. Let's move to now you've been commissioned. You're in the military because this moniker of yours, your byline, does not just evaporate once you graduate. But before we do that, what is the one message, you know, going through that to young women, let's say, that you learned and that has carried throughout your life, really? Like, what's the one thing?
I think it back to your comment, it is about resiliency. It's really about understanding the situation you're in and putting it all in context and waking up every morning ready to go out there and do it all over again. It's about not letting the naysayers get you down. And I remember one of my staff members gave me a little card one day that said something to that effect on it. And I kept it for years because it was so true. I also had, interestingly, that you know, the piece about networking, really, like, who else out there might be able to share that experience? And being the first female first captain, obviously I had nobody in that particular role, but the first Black first captain, Vince Brooks, came to see me right before a football game. And he gave me some advice. He said, just remember the playing field will never be level. You know, kind of keep your head up. Just recognize what you know, everywhere you go, to your point earlier, you're carrying that with you. That is going to be always part of you. And you've got to take that into consideration and how people are responding to you. But it really is about being resilient, not worrying, not over worrying about what people think or say or do, doing everything you possibly can to kind of make the hard decisions and make the hard choices. And did I share with you the story about the towel, the poster on the back of the door, the three women in the Budweiser bathing suits?
No.
So this is just really funny when you think about the situation people put you into and how you respond to it. So we were allowed to have like one stereo in the room and one poster on the back of the door, which again, because we were women, nobody ever saw, right? Because the door's always open 90 degrees.
Yeah.
Because almost all your classmates are men. So you always had your door open. But I, the commandant asked me to come and do a Saturday morning inspection. So in a morning inspection, you go from room to room, you make sure everybody's rooms are clean, that their glasses are lined up in their little sink thing and their toothbrushes properly displayed. This is no kidding. It's all just about discipline and attention to detail. But you look back on that, and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that for 4 years. But we walked into this one cadet room. And it's me and the commandant and three cadets. So I think it was like the commander and then the two people who shared the room. And they closed the door so we could do the inspection. And the commandant's looking around and he's looking at, you know, all the other shoes lined up is the usual thing you look at. And on the back of the door, they had their one poster. And it, you probably remember it, but it was the Budweiser ad. And it had three women laying side by side, beautiful women laying side by side on a beach towel. And across their bathing suit spelled out Budweiser.
I remember.
Remember it.
And then above the three women, the words say, man cannot live. And the bottom is on bread alone. And the commandant looks around the room. And he looks at me. And remember, there's three men in the room, all standing there watching me. And the commandant says, so, Cadet Baker, what kind of message do you think that poster sends? And I still to this day have no idea where this came from or why I said this. But I looked at him and go, well, I don't know, sir. I think it's about nutrition. And they left me alone after that. He never tried. I mean, I kept thinking, like, is this a setup? Why are you asking me this? There's no good answer to this question. And you know what? He didn't say anything. He just moved on to the next room. But I just, the things that you do in that environment where you know you're under constant scrutiny and it's all about saying the right things at the right time in the right place and not going too far to one side or to the other, but just again, trying to resiliency, that idea that going to happen again tomorrow. Somebody's going to do something like that again tomorrow, and you're going to have to be quick and you're going to have to think of the appropriate response so that you come out like looking okay. Because you know that was on the bulletin board the next day. You know somebody went in there and said, you won't believe what she said to the commandant.
But I think what's so impressive listening to you speak and hearing the story is that it sounds to me is you knew you had a job to do. And that's what you were doing. So you didn't, you cleared the noise and just one foot in front of the other and got the job done. And that's so impressive because I don't know a lot of people at that age that could do that.
I think it's a very accurate way of looking at it. And I was, again, fortunate to have a good staff that could cover gaps for me. And there were just so many crazy things that happened. I went and at one point I was asked, I think it was the Daughters of the American Revolution asked me to come and give a speech. They flew me down there and it was on this long stage and they had the whole Daughters of the American Revolution, like all the, you know, the president, the vice president, and all on this long table. And I was in my skirt and heels and, you know, all my fancy uniform. And before I went up to speak, I pulled my chair back and flipped off the back of the stage. And I'm in front of the whole room of people.
Wait, you fell? There.
I flipped right off the back of the stage. Heels over, just flipped completely off the back of the stage. And it was so funny. I got up and I pushed my chair back and sat back down like nothing happened. So when I got up, of course, I said, well, if you all saw me flip off the back of the stage, I was just practicing parachute landing falls. So no worry, no harm. Nobody's hurt here. But things like that, just how do you cover for that? How do you recover from that, you know, that crazy incident? And there was one of the...
Well, you're lucky they didn't have cell phones then. That would have been all over the place.
Absolutely. when I did the morning talk shows, and I still, you know, you think back on like, how could you handle this better, right? One of the morning talk show hosts, and I can't remember who it was anymore, asked me, he said, well, do you have a loud voice? And then he wanted me to demonstrate it in the middle of this live interview. And I did something silly. I don't remember what it was. I responded somehow. But afterwards, somebody's like, you should have just invited him to the parade on Saturday and had him come out and listen for himself. I'm like, yeah, that would have been a better response. But you learn those things, right? You're not at 21 years old. I mean, you're just trying to figure it all out.
Good training, and I'll be able to answer that. I mean, they threw you to the wolves, for God's sakes.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that you shared with us is you have a photo with, and again, a lot of important people come to the academy. One of them was Colin Powell, and he had said to you, ironically enough, first female commanding cadet, and then the first African-American Black chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, which for people that don't know, and you should know, that's the big Mac Daddy of all military. So it's a really big position. And then obviously Colin Powell went off to do the SecDef, no, Secretary of State, right? Okay, so flash forward to the military. So you go into the military. Ironically enough, we've never had a female chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, have we?
No.
Isn't that crazy, you guys?
We're getting closer.
Yeah.
I really do think now we've got women in some of those top general officer positions that really will align you. And just, you know, for background on that a little bit too, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is normally going to be picked from a combat arms branch. Yeah. I mean, I think it's always picked from a combat arms branch, which of course, when Lori and I were lieutenants, that you weren't even allowed to go into combat arms. And I remember how crushed I was when I realized I couldn't be an armor officer, because I, for some, that's just what I liked. That's all the training, and that's what I was interested in doing, driving big tanks around. I mean, it just sounded like a really fantastic career, and I liked thinking about that. But so you knew, unfortunately, as a woman in the military, that there was a glass ceiling. I mean, it wasn't a question of whether you were going to hit a glass ceiling or not. It was there, and it was never going to be, in our time, it was not going to change. I mean, for us, hopefully all the things that we did and we were successful and we kind of picked away at led to women being allowed to go to Ranger school and women being in combat arms positions. And now we're creating that path that will eventually, I think, allow for a woman to compete for the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff down the road.
Yeah. Well, I remember being at commander's course. I haven't told you the story. And commander's course is when you're about ready to take command in the military, you have to do a special course to prepare you. And they thought I was you. And everyone was whispering and, you know, like, oh. And so finally, it was a senior enlisted person that was one of the instructors at the course pulled me aside and said, are you her? And I said, who's her? Yeah. And I am her. And, so, you know, the first female first captain at the academy. And I go, oh, no. I go, but I know her and I live in her old apartment. Yeah. So walk us through that. So, you know, now you're in the military, and for the audience, Kristen was in the military for 30 years. Thank you so much for doing that. I popped smoke and got out of there after 6, but what's the lingering effects now? And did you feel continued pressure that you were still in that fishbowl?
So when I graduated, the public affairs officer at West Point pulled me aside and told me it was now my responsibility to be a representative of women for the rest of my career. And I remember I just looked at him and said, no, sir, my only responsibility is to be the best second lieutenant I can be. But I would be completely naive to say it didn't follow me. It always followed me. And I don't talk about it. And I never really have, unless somebody is a graduate and asks me, or somebody recognizes me, which happened all the time. And for those first, you know, 5 or 10 years, I remember at one point, and I've done interviews throughout that time. I've done Women's History Month. So I've always hopefully leveraged that background to continue to advocate for women everywhere, and women in the military in particular, because I do think it's important to build that network of people that can help boost you up, because it just really didn't exist when we were, you know, young, and it's starting to get better. And I see with my husband and I have 3 daughters. They're 25, 23, and now 20. And I apparently drove them all out of state. So one lives in New York City and one lives in Denver and one's going to UCLA. So I've kind of got the United States covered. But they have so much better network than I think I ever did when I was their age. And I think people now really start to recognize the valuable opportunity to have role models to look up to. And so I've always taken it as my sort of sub-responsibility to be the best officer I could be, but also to go out there and make sure that people are comfortable in their own skin, that they know that nobody makes it through life unscathed. So whatever happened to you, put it in context and, you know, resiliency, you know, just plug on, keep driving, keep trying to make a positive change, recognize the people behind you. If you can't get it done, and I hit a lot of ceilings throughout my career, there were jobs I interviewed for that I didn't get. There were things that happened that should not have happened, and they were specifically because of my gender. And I knew that to be the case. But I kept, you know, I always keep in the back of my mind, just press and you'll make it better for the person behind you. Even if you're not necessarily representing women every day, every time you do something successful, you've created an environment that hopefully somebody else will get a better, more fair chance. And I used to laugh about this with my other women colleagues as I got more senior, when we started becoming more open talking about it, is that it, and Lori, I'm sure this happened to you as well, where you'd get in a room full of, you know, infantrymen or, you know, combat arms officers, and they would tell you, I've never had to work with a woman before, but you know what? You're the exception. You're all right.
Yeah.
And my running joke is always like, so you've been told that too, right? Yes. And you've been told that too, right? So we must all be the exception.
You know what? One guy, he came up to me and I was a commander at the time. And he goes, Ryder, which is my maiden name. Just remember, I'm the meat eater and you're the server. As long as you know that, we're cool. I mean, that was how it was.
It was. And people would tell you sometimes too, I was an intelligence officer. So I spent all my time in intelligence for the most part. And they, you know, you'd hear comments like, look, I don't care if you can carry a, you know, 75-pound rock, as long as you give me the intelligence that I need to be successful. So I think there was a slowing recognition of the value of the mindset. And I talked about this at one point, but I was the chief of counterterrorism for 3 years in Europe for the United States Army Europe. So for all the forces in Europe, I got to serve in that role where I would look for what's happening, who are the bad guys. And I had a phenomenal team for that 3 years. But I went back to West Point and I gave a speech and I talked about how one of the real values of women, it was during Women's History Month, of women in intelligence right now, is that natural empathy. And that empathy that we're taught growing up as kids and young women, it's reinforced over and over again, makes you an excellent counterterrorism analyst. Because you're always having to put your mind in the perspective of the enemy, whoever that is. And it changes obviously throughout the years, but it makes you really good at what you do. And so I think there was a growing recognition, at least, of where those roles, because remember, you know, there was still the Women's Army Corps in our lifetime where women didn't serve in, they didn't even really serve in before that, even in the regular army per se, they were allowed to be nurses. Or, you know, there were a few exceptional roles. So I think we've slowly seen that evolution of changed expectations that now you see women in Ranger School, and some of them are just knocking it out of the park. I mean, it's just incredible. I don't think I could, you know, I don't think I could do that at my age anymore.
Well, one of the things that, Michelle, we talk about this, but Kristen, off air, we've talked about it extensively, is it's such a privilege to be in a position in which you can pay it forward and feel as though you're doing a service to those coming up, you know, the runway for women. But boy, we did a really shitty job back in the day. And I, you know, one of my biggest regrets is I wish, as someone who was one of the earlier female graduating classes of the academy, I really wish I would have locked arms with my sisters around me. And we just did not do a good job of that. And in the military as well. Do you think that's changed?
I do think it's changing. And I think part of it too, is that I think social media has been a boon in that respect. So I think that women, West Point graduates in this particular discussion, but I think they've been able to reach out to one another in a way that we couldn't. Yeah. You know, the only way we could have talked to each other is if we went to each other's rooms, and being visible was not something we really wanted to do or be. But I think that it has gotten better. I think women are much more willing to share how they feel and what they're, you know, their good days and their bad days. I mean, back then it was put on your game face every day. You did not, you know, you never let them see you cry kind of mentality. And you never wanted to look hurt. You never wanted to look sad. You just wanted to put on that game face. And so I think now, at least in groups of women, I think it's amazing. I think one of the most wonderful things about when I retired and went into my first job at AWS, I was working for a woman and I had women colleagues, and it was just amazing. Matter of fact, I met one of them for lunch yesterday. We still, even though I'm no longer with that company, we still keep in touch. We still reach out to one another and we talk about things that we never talked about before, which is so cool to be able to call somebody and say, in my neighborhood's the same way. We have a group of women in our neighborhood. We get together and I'll ask them things like, so when you were working doing this, that, and the other, what was your experience with this? And I don't think I ever would have asked that question when I was young. I just don't think it was accepted.
Well, I think our generation of women, and especially if you're in a male-dominated environment, Michelle, you were too, you just, vulnerability was off the table.
We didn't, you were fighting for your spot. So it was like, you didn't even have those conversations.
No, absolutely not. I will tell you that I was 10 years, maybe even more, 12 years into my career. And I had a really great team and it was mixed men and women and it was just phenomenal. And that's when I was the chief of counterterrorism. And I'll never forget, I had one woman come in. She was amazing. She had two young daughters. And we all talked all the time. She came into me one day and she said, you know, ma'am, I just want to thank you for making it okay to admit I have a family. And it's true. There used to be this little catchphrase, if the Army wanted you to have a family, they would have issued you one. And it was like that. When you first graduated, when I got engaged, I had a soldier come up and tell me how sorry he was that I got engaged, because now it would mean I would get married and have kids and get out of the Army and I wouldn't have a career anymore and he was going to miss me. And I just remember thinking, like, nobody asks men questions like that. Nobody went to my husband and said, I'm sorry to see you're engaged. Nobody asks men, like, how hard is it to balance your family and your career? Well, they do now, but back then they didn't. It was just assumed that it was okay for your male counterpart to have a family and a wife and kids. And women, boy, I'll tell you, as soon as you admitted you were going to have kids, they were like, okay, so how long are you staying in? When are you going to get out now? And I think that's changed a lot. And I do think that we talk a lot more too. I share tips often about what I did to maintain three kids, a full Army career, two crazy hour careers, the little tips and tricks that I learned along the way, hopefully to make it a little easier for somebody coming in behind me to realize, just because you have kids doesn't mean you have to get out of the Army. Just because you got married doesn't mean you have to separate and do something different. Do it for other reasons. Do it because you want to be more creative and you find that your current work's stifling. Do it because you don't want to move all the time. You would rather be, you know, put in some roots, but don't do it because somebody tells you you can't, because you're now a woman with a family.
Yeah. Wow.
You're such a badass. Jesus.
I told you, she is. She is. Yeah. And I've always had mad respect for you, Kristen. I mean, I the thing that's great is I think sometimes women feel, and this is not just, you know, for the military side of the house. I think it's in corporate in general. We feel like we've got to act a certain way. Right. And, you know, sometimes we feel like we have to model the man behavior. Yeah. And there's something really great about balancing your femininity with also being in a male-dominated environment. And you did that so, so well, where I felt like this is not a woman trying to be a man. Mm-hmm. She was cute, but yet she didn't use the cuteness to her advantage. I mean, you really kind of walk that very delicate balance. And I really appreciate that.
And to the question about the rumor I thought you were going to ask me about when you asked about the person hanging from the mess hall,
are we going to get stuff right now?
It was whether or not I ever actually got an offer for Playboy.
And did you?
I don't know. To this day, I've heard both.
Oh,
I've heard that
I think
they
you
were.
did. I think you did. You did. Yeah.
The other one was the Tonight Show. Yeah, West Point would not allow me to be on the Tonight Show because it was after our taps. It was after Lights Out.
Yeah.
I still to this day don't know why they, because that would have been amazing. What a wonderful experience to be on something like that. But there, yeah, that whole trying to maintain your femininity and recognize like the importance in valuing who you are and what you're all about is so important. And I really think that as I progressed through my career, I saw a lot more women who joined the military who did that balance beautifully. I know Miss Colorado, Mrs. Colorado, years ago was a lieutenant, and I got to meet her, and she was just amazing. I mean, she's somebody you might want to bring on the podcast sometime. She was absolutely a hysterical speaker, and I ended up speaking with her at one point. She was a bodybuilder, but she was built. She's about my size. And she talks about all the things she had to do to get ready for those bodybuilding competitions. And she was a successful bodybuilder, but she's beautiful and, wonderful to talk to and just, very inclusive of everybody. And it's just so neat to see how we embrace a broader variety of people, understanding that it takes a team to get anything done. And sometimes you need the big guy who can carry you in a fireman's carry, or the big girl who can carry you in a fireman's carry. And sometimes you need that scrawny little person that can crawl under and over things. I don't know, to implant a device or, whatever it is. But it's all about bringing together the best minds and the best physical capabilities into the team that makes you successful out in whatever it is you're doing. And I think people just need to value who they are and what they bring to that team, rather than trying to be something else, unless you just want to grow and change. And that I think is really critical to, for all our young women and our young men now to hear as well.
Yeah.
Mic drop. Yes.
Mic drop. Okay. Well, thank you. And thank you for taking us through that twisty, turny road, because I think it's fascinating and a lot of great messages for women, for sure. So, all right, Michelle, are we ready to have a little fun, Kristen?
I think so. I'm afraid to ask, but yes.
Okay, I gave you somewhat of a hint, but we do a segment sponsored by Luxury Pickleball. So it's Luxury Pickleball Lightning Round. Luxury Pickleball is curated and quality products on and off the court. And they also now are doing vacations. So she's a 10, gets you a slash of 20% off. Go check them out. All right. Put her in the hot seat. I'm starting this, right, Michelle?
You started off. We got some questions for you.
Okay, Kristen, what or where is your happy place?
By the water, whether it's the beach, a lake, anywhere where I can be by water, on water, that's my happy place. That's where I can just bring it all back together and take a moment and just watch birds or play with the dogs, but anywhere by the water.
Wow. That was pretty good for not having a heads up on what I was going to ask. Jeez. All
Yeah.
right, let's go.
Okay. If you could sit next to anyone on an airplane, who would it be?
Oh my gosh. I want to sit next to Lori.
Yeah, no.
I would love to sit next to somebody who's actually been really successful in their own right. It's a tough question. Somebody I've never met before, probably. Yeah, I'd love to actually sit next to a politician that's wrapped up in all these current, whether it's Donald Trump or Joe Biden, and just literally have a conversation. Just what is going on? What are you seeing and hearing? I mean, you could pick either one,
Yeah, you can
but
sit next
what?
to Joe Biden, but he won't know you're next to him. Sorry, Joe.
I would just love to do that. Just tell me a little bit about the things that the rest of us don't know. And what is it like to be the president of the most powerful nation in the world? What is your day like? What do you experience? I just think it would be fascinating. And I would also think that it would be really informative to get kind of underneath the hood a little bit Like, what do you really like as opposed to what we see? Because I have one side comment on that is a lot of people have asked me over the years, like, why didn't you leverage your fame to, just to continue to do all these different things? And I have to tell you, the people, when you have that kind of spotlight put on you, tend to turn you into a kind of tend to turn you into what they want you to be. And so you really, a lot of people, I think, that have that kind of fame and experience in a long time become that image other people have of them and forget who they really are themselves. And I didn't want to do that. But I suspect all these politicians also have that day face, night face. It'd be fun to find out what the president of the United States has in the night face. Like, what is it like when you're not in role?
You really want to know what Trump's like, what his face is like? All right, I'm going to ask a different question. Do you believe in UFOs?
I do.
And this is,
Absolutely.
you do? See, this is coming from a military intelligence.
What do you know?
I can neither confirm nor deny those rumors. This is where I make counter accusations. No, I think part of it is you want to believe, right? You want to believe there's something else out there. But yeah, I believe in UFOs.
Ding, ding. All right.
Okay. Favorite, it could be either or, favorite album or concert that you've attended.
Oh, I've been to a lot. I really liked Coldplay.
Ooh.
We went to see Coldplay in a big stadium, and it was in the evening, and they had a light show, and the music was fantastic. And it was this spontaneous decision. We were driving up somewhere in Maryland, and we saw a billboard advertising Coldplay playing that night. So we bought tickets right then and there and took one of my daughter's high school friends, and it was just an amazing experience.
Awesome. I love Coldplay.
Same.
Okay, this one has a little bit more gravitas. If you could tell your former or younger self something that you know today, what would it be?
So I think looking back, and I do share this now with my own kids, the idea that when people are talking to you, when they're criticizing you or not being very nice, I would say probably 95% of the time, people's comments directed at you are really more a reflection of themselves. It's their own fears, it's their own experience. It could very well just be the fact that they're having a bad day, then it really is about you. And I think that there's something to be said for stepping back and realizing that at the end of the day, all those times you worried about what somebody thought of you or what somebody was going to say about you, they're really not thinking about you at all. They're really thinking about themselves. They're really thinking about what their experience in this is. And I think that I would reinforce that with my younger self. Like, don't worry so much. One, most people are going to forget what you did or said anyway. And two, most of the time when somebody is not very nice to you or says something really mean, it's a reflection on their own experiences and maybe something that happened to them when they were younger. And so they're kind of reflecting their own fear or their own insecurities onto you with their commentary.
Wow. Okay, Michelle, she just hit the cover off that ball.
I'm just going to say, I mean, you are, I know we're talking about your time at first captain, but you are also first class. Thank
Thank
you so
you.
much for
Yeah.
doing this. Yeah, it's.
No, it's been a pleasure talking to both of you. I really enjoyed this. I think that it's really to your point of like how the whole podcast started. Well, I'll tell you, there's so much great value in investing, taking time to talk to your friends and making that group of friends you can rely on and trust on. And I found that to be more the case as I've gotten more further along in my career and a little bit older. Like you've got to have somebody to call when you have a crisis, and you need to have that group of that network of people that you can rely on when things just aren't going well. And frankly, when things are going well, it's great to have people to celebrate with. And I think it's just a pleasure to talk to both of you and just to really be part of it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Look at Michelle just grinning.
Yeah, I love, I mean, I always talk, I'm so impressed by this years of service, what you guys, both of you. I mean, it's amazing.
Thank you. She's, she has a little bit more on her resume than I do.
I'm a little jealous. I have a little like
I kind of was Private Benjamin, to be honest. So there we go. You got to be 10 times 5 to know what I'm talking about on that one. Okay. Thank you so much, Kristen. And thank you so much to our audience. And we will catch you next time. All right. Bye, guys.
Are you looking for high-end pickleball equipment, attire, or even a luxe pickleball vacation? Introducing Luxury Pickleball, the curator of all products and experiences for your social or competitive pickleballer. Paddles, attire, accessories, and quality life experiences wherever you travel with your paddle. Use discount code SHE'S10, that's SHE'S10, for 20% off for quality on and off the court. Let's go.
Follow us on Instagram at She's a 10 times 5. You can click on the link in our bio to listen to all of our previous episodes, as well as check out our live video interviews over our YouTube channel. You can also find us on Apple, Spotify, iHeart, pretty much wherever else you decide to listen to your favorite podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe.